a vision that has come to reality. It is a dream come true. I wanted this space, this physical space, to honor them, to honor their hard work.
Coming up on Carolina Connection, women working their way back from addiction hope to find help in UNC's new treatment center. Good morning, I'm Jessa O'Connor.
And I'm David Duchin. Also this morning, we take a look this Earth Day at how UNC and the town of Chapel Hill go green with environmentally friendly buildings. We explore the dangers of texting and driving without ever getting in a car. UNC celebrates a day of experiments and exhibits for scientists of all ages. And we try to figure out what's behind a strange late night sight on UNC's campus.
There was this huge group of people and they were all dressed in black and some of them had masks and hoods and stuff.
From the UNC School of Media and Journalism, this is Carolina Connection.
Thanks for joining us. UNC is making strides to place itself at the forefront of addiction treatment for women. It opened a brand new $3 million center in Carrboro, and at the ribbon-cutting ceremony this week, program directors expressed optimism that the facility will make their programs more affordable, accessible, and able to serve the women who need them. UNC is opening new doors for women on the path to addiction recovery. Wednesday was a big day for UNC Horizons, a substance abuse treatment program for pregnant or parenting women and their children. More than 100 people gathered in the morning for a ribbon cutting to celebrate the grand opening of a newly constructed facility on North Greensboro Street in Carrboro.
All right, we're going to head a little bit further down the hallway. So
before the ceremony was a media tour of the building, which now brings together several once disjointed elements of the Horizons program. Women can bring their children to the child care center while also seeking medical treatment and counseling, now all under one roof. The program's director, Andre Jones, said after the ribbon cutting that the design of the new facility, which was funded by private donations and a grant from the Oak Foundation, will support the women who come to the facility for treatment.
It is truly a vision that has come to reality. It is a dream come true. I wanted this space, this physical space, to honor them, to honor their hard work.
The ceremony kicked off with a series of speakers, including Senator Richard Burr and Governor Roy Cooper, who praised Horizon's mission of addressing addiction with a treatment model instead of a law enforcement model.
We know that this is a comprehensive effort. I'm glad to be on this stage with Senator Richard Burr, and I think that shows you that this is both a state and federal and bipartisan effort to fight this problem. And I'm glad to be here with him, and we need lots of federal money, so that would be good. That would be good.
Senator Burr commended the program for having set a progressive example in addiction treatment for so long.
This is a model program that other states will replicate because of the 20 years of experience they've got.
The last of the speakers to take the podium was Lucy Brown, a graduate of the program.
Last night I was so nervous that I Googled what to wear when taking pictures with elected officials.
She thanked Horizons for the skills it gave her to overcome her addiction and raise her now four-month-old daughter.
I implore everyone to look at the entire picture before underestimating us. UNC Horizons never did, and for that I am truly grateful. Thank you.
Brown did the honors of cutting the ribbon to a resounding applause. It was the beginning of what UNC Horizons hopes will be a new chapter in addiction treatment.
A conservative-backed campus free speech bill is a subject of debate in the North Carolina House of Representatives, but its future is unclear after a tie vote this week. The bill would punish students who interrupt guest speakers on UNC system campuses. The bill failed in committee Wednesday with a 6-6 tie, but it could be voted on again. The bill is modeled off of a proposal from the Goldwater Institute, a conservative and libertarian think tank in Arizona. The punishments in the bill are unclear, but those laid out in the Goldwater proposal include suspension or even expulsion after two offenses. Jim Manley is one of the Goldwater proposal's authors.
Disciplinary procedures don't focus on legitimate protest. They only focus on protest that crosses over the line from presenting an alternative viewpoint to trying to silence an invited speaker.
The bill would also allow students to sue the university if they feel their speech rights have been violated, and it would make lessons on free speech a regular part of freshman orientation.
It's Earth Day today, and UNC and the town of Chapel Hill are doing their part to go green with some new buildings that are energy efficient and reduce emissions. They're called LEED buildings, and there are now a handful of them on UNC's campus, including the Genome Sciences building. Tala Gudarzi reports.
UNC senior and biology major Saad Khan has always stopped to do work, hang with friends, and just relax at Genome Sciences building.
I usually always make it a point to just go and stop there and hang out for a little bit, get a snack, and just take my time before getting started with the rest of my day.
But why this building? What is it about Genome that appeals so much to Khan?
It feels a lot brighter, and it feels less artificial, and it's sort of having the natural sunlight come through just sort of picks you up.
Improving lighting, air quality, and overall living environments have met the requirements to make Genome Sciences Building LEED Gold. There are four categories of LEED buildings: certified, silver, gold, and platinum, depending on how many features are installed. Genome is one of the five buildings on campus to be LEED certified and have the official plaque on the building.
But it's much more than a plaque, because what it means is those facilities are going to use less energy, less water, use recycled materials to construct them, use renewable resources oftentimes.
That's Cindy Shea, Director of Sustainability at UNC. She says Khan's reasoning for enjoying the space is no accident. Genome is designed that way. Vertical fins on the east side of the building deflect the light from directly entering the building, and then the horizontal shelves intercepting the fins balance the daylight.
So the sun comes down, hits those horizontal light shelves, then bounces off our reflective ceiling and goes further into the space so that people have natural lighting.
Shea says the natural light not only reduces electricity costs, but increases vitamin D and students' productivity levels. The building also saves energy in the heating and cooling system.
We're standing in an auditorium right now. One of the ways of reducing energy consumption is to install carbon dioxide sensors. So when the space is empty, you don't need to be heating and cooling and dehumidifying the space.
Shea says as students come into the auditorium, breathing out carbon dioxide, the sensors are alerted and the fresh outdoor air flows in, which is then heated, cooled, and dehumidified.
And the heat supply might be those black diffusers there. That might be the heating and cooling supply system there, probably is. So within those ducts would be the carbon dioxide sensors as well to tell it when it needs more outdoor air.
All new UNC buildings designed since 2008 are at least LEED Silver. They will also use at least 30% less energy than allowed by the building code. Chapel Hill sustainability planner John Richardson says the town also has a requirement for all future town-owned buildings.
The council enacted a green building ordinance back in 2004 requiring that all of its new buildings from that point forward, including its major renovations, would have to meet what we call LEED Silver.
A lot of the LEED features are not that noticeable. Part of what makes the Genome Sciences Building certified is the rainwater collected in a tank under the Bell Tower Amphitheater just outside the building. This rainwater flushes the toilets in Genome and irrigates the grass next door on the football field at Keenan Stadium. In Chapel Hill, I'm Tali Ghadarzi.
Virtual reality goggles, simulated situations that end in car crashes. AT&T came to UNC's campus yesterday and gave students the chance to experience firsthand the dangers of texting and driving. Arjun Alasi has the story from behind the wheel. Well, kind of.
I'm driving through my neighborhood, and I'm passing the local school on my way to work when I hear my phone. Oh, it's my girlfriend. Dang it, I forgot my lunch. Oh, goodness, almost ran over a biker. That was a close call, but I'm glad everyone's okay. Too bad I can't go back for my lunch, though. I'm getting closer to the office when I get another text. This one's from work. They're wondering where I am and if they should start the meeting without me. As I try to answer, I don't see the red light at the intersection. One text too many and I'm T-boned by a car in the middle of the street. Sirens will be rushing my way soon. And that's when the headset comes off.
It's actually a simulator. You can actually...
I'm back sitting in a tiny plastic car in the middle of a bustling student union. I was in a distracted driving simulator hosted by AT&T and their It Can Wait campaign. Rob DeRoe is AT&T's Regional Director of External Affairs, and he thinks these demonstrations really do work.
I've seen many people get out of that simulator and say, you know what, that is easy to do. That I see myself doing this all the time, and now I see the dangers of what could happen.
After the students finish the simulator, they're asked to sign a pledge not to text and drive. Michael Stevenson helps operate the program, and he said that AT&T got more than 12 million people to sign the pledge last year.
For them to vow to us that, you know, they're not going to use their phone. So that's like a pledge that they can, you know, be reminded of to not use their phone while they're on the road.
Javi Velasquez also went through the simulation and signed the pledge. He says that he uses his phone in his car from time to time, but does his best not to look at it too much. He says that he always hears about the dangers, but it's different when you see them yourself.
I'd say the simulator was eye-opening in that and really shows you like what happens if worst comes to worst and you do get an accident because of texting while driving.
Velasquez definitely isn't alone. ZenDrive is a company that gathers data involving driving and phone use. One of its recent studies found that drivers use their phones 88% of the time they step into a car. That same sample also shows that people spend about 3.5 minutes on their phone out of every hour they're driving. In Chapel Hill, I'm Jonah Lossie.
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh wait, more like lasers and telescopes and brains. Morehead Planetarium and Science Center is gearing up for UNC's 7th Annual Science Expo happening today. Sade Wilson has the story.
Maybe that's what it's supposed to look like? That also might be a failed print, I don't know.
Oh, no.
There's something.
In case you're not familiar, that's what a 3D printer sounds like. I've counted at least 8 here in this room alone. UNC student Isaac Bolter is showing me around UNC's first makerspace.
I don't see anyone. I don't think there are any prints in here. Oh, here's one.
Located on the ground floor of Venable Hall, it's a space where anyone can create virtually anything using the latest and greatest technological tools. Alongside the room full of 3D printers sits a laser cutter that's carving shapes into a wooden canvas.
It'll etch metal and leather if you've got the right stuff.
That's so cool.
It's my favorite tool in here, hands down.
The makerspace, along with other laboratories here on campus, will be open for tours during today's UNC Science Expo. Denise Woodard is the program coordinator of the North Carolina Science Festival.
Most scientists, I think, have gone into it because they enjoy doing what they do all day, every day, and this is their chance to share that with the general public.
In addition to the open houses, 124 booths will be set up to take over Cameron Avenue. Expo goers can expect to get hands-on with experiments from almost every area of science, to include social sciences like archaeology and linguistics. Woodard says the goal of the expo is to present current high-level scientific research that's happening on campus to people of all ages in a relatable way.
Whether you think you should care about science or not, you should at least know that it's a lot of fun.
It took 6 months of planning to coordinate what can be thought of as a grand science fair. With recent threats to cut funding for some of the nation's biggest health and science programs, Woodard says it's important for people to know what science is doing.
It's such a part of your daily life, whether you realize it or not. You know, your car's engine, the clothes you wear, the cell phone that you have in your back pocket, all of those things come from science and technology, and many of those things were developed on university campuses.
The UNC Science Expo is free for attendees, but Woodard says $25,000 was set aside from both Morehead Planetarium and Science Center and the North Carolina Science Festival to pay for tent rentals, traffic enforcement staff, and parking staff. She says she hopes attendees will develop a love for science that's out of this world. In Chapel Hill, I'm Sade Wilson.
Coming up on Carolina Connection, a student-run business is making sure that Tar Heels walk around campus with clean kicks. We try to figure out the secret behind a decades-old secret society.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food than we know what to do with in this country, yet 17 million kids in America are struggling with hunger. Makes no sense. Luckily, the Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Hey, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college. This is beyond a simple donation. It's the opportunity for America to invest in its kids and take an active stake in the future of the country. The return on your investment isn't money. What you get back is knowing you protected our potential. So one day, that potential can grow up to become surgeons and architects, executives and engineers, people who can change the future just by being a part of it. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. but a wonderful thing to invest in. A public service announcement brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to Carolina Connection, UNC's student-produced radio newscast. I'm Jess O'Connor.
And I'm David Duchin. Are your favorite Converse high tops covered in stains from rushing Franklin Street after the national championship game? A new student-run shoe cleaning service can help. Sophie Cott spoke to the owners of Zapatos Express about the company's first month in business.
Scuff marks, mud splatter, and grass stains. The nemesis to any pair of clean kicks. UNC sophomore Brandon Ivy says he saw the potential in building a business around this untapped market.
I cleaned my own shoes, and last year my roommate always was upset about him going out and messing up his shoes, and he would kind of clean them not properly.
While Ivy doesn't deem himself a sneakerhead in need of the newest and most expensive Jordans, he finds fresh and clean footwear to be an important aspect of his overall ensemble.
When we go out, we like to look good. I know a big part of me and like my culture, I'm like from D.C., like, shoe game has to be on point. Like, if your shoes are whack, if they're dirty, you're not looking good, you're not styling.
Recognizing a similar opinion among their fellow UNC students, Ivy, an entrepreneurship minor, and his friends launched Zapatos Express the week before spring break. Aside from shoe cleaning, the company also offers free pickups and drop-offs.
Definitely talked to, like, a lot of customers, because that's what I learned in my entrepreneurship class before you launched. And a lot of them would have been deterred if they had to go drop off their shoes at a location.
Charging $5 for sneakers and $7 for dress shoes, the Zapatos Express cleaning process is simple. Ivy initially applies a shoe conditioner and then scrubs a lot.
Like, you just scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub.
Before the shoes are completely clean, Ivy must treat the main problem areas, the lower lining and the laces, which require a little extra attention. Freshman Blake Johnson says his Nike running shoes were like new when he got them back.
They're pretty much white, and so like I had a good amount of scuffs and like a lot of marks on them, and they came back pretty much pure white.
Johnson says he heard about Zapatos Express by word of mouth. Mario Santiago, head of business development, says phase two includes creating new marketing strategies to reach customers.
We are working to make our logo in the past 2 weeks and making our website. We've made an Instagram account, a Facebook page.
Without having implemented a marketing scheme yet, the company has averaged 27 orders per week and totaled over 70 completed orders thus far. Sophomore and chief operating officer Sachin Bedadapur says the orders continue to grow.
The problem we're facing now is a good problem, and it's that we just need to figure out how we can handle more business. If we end up getting 50 or 100 orders a week and we need more people to do pickups and drop-offs, then I think potentially we would expand that way.
Expansion in the future may be necessary, as satisfied students like Johnson plan on being return customers.
Yes, I'll use their service again on the shoes I'm currently wearing, actually.
Which means a lot more brushing for Ivy. In Chapel Hill, I'm Sophie Cott.
John Thomas joins us live in the studio with sports. John, what's going on with all of our Tar Heel teams?
Well, Jessa, perhaps the hottest Tar Heel team can be found over at Bochimer Stadium. The baseball team started this week third in the country after winning 11 of its last 12 games, but the Heels then suffered a puzzling loss to the Liberty Flames Tuesday by the score 5-2. Now that loss is really just a blip on the radar of an otherwise outstanding season. Carolina dropped to 29-8 overall with that loss, but UNC bounced back last night with a 5-2 win on the road against the Pitt Panthers to move to 15-4 in the ACC. That leaves them tied with Clemson and Louisville for the best record in the conference. They'll play Game 2 of that ACC series against Pitt today at 3 and conclude the three-game set tomorrow at noon. Now, this successful season is a welcome change for a team that's missed the NCAA tournament each of the past two seasons. So what's different this year? Well, the offense, anchored by junior shortstop Logan Warmoth, has been consistently good all season, but it all starts with the depth of that pitching staff. Carolina's starting rotation and bullpen have combined for an earned run average of 2.60 this year, good for fourth best in the entire country. They're anchored by junior J.B. Bukauskas, who gave up 2 earned runs in 6 2/3 innings last night. He also struck out 8 batters en route to his 7th win of the season in 10 starts. Most MLB draft experts list Bukauskas as a top 10 pick following the season, meaning Tar Heel fans may only have a little longer to see the talented starter before he heads off to the major leagues. but Bukauskas isn't the only potential top 10 pick to talk about today. The NFL draft kicks off Thursday, and UNC's Mitch Trubisky is projected to be the first quarterback taken in the draft. Joining us now to talk about Trubisky and all the other Tar Heels in the draft is Daily Tar Heel sports writer Brendan Marks. Brendan, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Brendan, obviously the question surrounding the NFL draft on everyone's mind, how high is Mitch Trubisky going to go, and could he even go number one overall?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with the Cleveland Browns is you never know what they're going to do, and so there's always a chance that Mitch could go there. But from the people that I've talked to around the league, they think that it's more likely he'll go in the back half of the top 10. But with quarterbacks, people are always going to jump up and try and grab one, and obviously he's a good-looking one, so it makes sense.
And talking to people and from kind of the research you've done, what do you think is the best fit for Mitch Trubisky to develop as a player?
Yeah, I think in talking to some people around the program, they all recognize the need that Mitch isn't necessarily the most polished guy. He's only started for one season, and so if he could go to a situation where he could sit and learn first, that would be a lot better for him. A couple of people mentioned going to potentially Kansas City or Houston, where he can sit for a year or two and then develop into the starter from that point. An offensive line is also really important for Mitch going forward.
What about other players? Obviously, Mitch Trubisky's going to go. He's going to be the first Tar Heel off the board. Who are going to be the next couple that we're going to see off the board for Tar Heel fans, maybe in the second, third, fourth round?
I think the next guy that you're going to see go is either going to be one of two people. It's either going to be the wide receiver, Mac Hollins, because he brings a ridiculous combination of length and speed, and he's going to contribute on special teams immediately, so he's a player that teams will like because he's versatile. Or the defensive lineman, Nazir Jones. He's got a big frame, explosive, can get back to the quarterback and really stuff the run as well. So I think those are two players that have teams interested in some of the middle rounds.
One name we haven't mentioned, that's Ryan Switzer, obviously an explosive playmaker for Carolina. Where do you see him fitting in the NFL? Is it going to be as a punt returner, or will he be able to carve out a role as maybe a slot receiver for a team?
I think his primary role coming into the league is probably going to be as a punt returner, because while he is an explosive receiver, and he's actually probably better at playing wide receiver than he is as a punt returner, hasn't had a return, wasn't able to keep the momentum going that he had his freshman year, I think he's still going to be slotted in as a punter kick returner because he does have that potential to bring it all the way back, and those guys are so valuable. And then from that, I think he'll try and build up his role in a wide receiving corps.
All right, well, that was Brendan Marks of the Daily Tar Heel. Brendan, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks again, really appreciate it.
Now, Brendan and I obviously talked about a number of different players, but one more Tar Heel to keep an eye on, that's TJ Logan. Logan has moved up a round or two on most draft boards after he ran the fastest 40-yard dash time of all the running backs at the NFL Combine. Look for a team to take a chance on Logan, perhaps as early as the fifth round. In other news this weekend, the number 16 men's lacrosse team faces a critical matchup on the road at number 6 Notre Dame today. The Heels suffered a heartbreaking overtime loss to number 1 Syracuse last weekend, 12-11. At one point in the third quarter, Carolina held a 10-5 lead before the Orange came roaring back. Now, the Heels are 6-6 on the season, and right now they're not projected to make the NCAA tournament. A win against the Fighting Irish today at noon would help, but Carolina will still likely need to make some noise in the ACC tournament to go deeper in the postseason. That'll wrap things up for sports today. Back to you, Jessa.
Thanks, John. Hidden behind a row of hedges just off Franklin Street is an unassuming brown, shingled house. It isn't your average residence. It's the Gorgon's Head Lodge, home to one of UNC's oldest secret societies, the Order of the Gorgon's Head. But what is the Order of the Gorgon's Head, and who are its members? Sade Wilson and Maggie Blunk set out to uncover the mystery.
There he is.
Oh, there's dogs.
Oh, yep, two dogs.
So this seems like a bad idea.
How did we end up in front of a stranger's house with two dogs barreling towards us? We should probably go back to the beginning. Plenty of students have stories of brushes with the occult on campus. Maddie Pliska and Joseph Vinar witnessed a particularly strange scene in August outside of Stacy Residence Hall that piqued our interest.
There was this huge group of people and they were all dressed in black and some of them had masks and hoods and stuff.
And like, we're like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden they all like shotgun these beers and they're just like yelling and screaming and they like all run off immediately.
A few quick Google searches led us to several sightings of a secret society called the Order of the Gimgul, marching from their castle fortress to Forest Theater in robes on Halloween. But Pliska and Vinar's mystery episode wasn't on Halloween.
So could it be Gimgul's rival, the Order of the Gorgon's Head, a secret society founded in 1896? First, we needed to consult an expert in UNC history, so we began our quest at the library.
I'm just going to look and pull up one of the yearbooks.
This is Nicholas Graham, university archivist.
Here we go. So there's Gorgon's Head.
Graham said in the late 1800s, early 1900s, secret societies were not uncommon at UNC.
There was the 13 Club, the Order of the Sheiks, the Minotaurs. There was not a lot going on in Chapel Hill. There wasn't much of a town at all, and the university was very small. So I think it was students looking to find something to do with their free time.
The Order of the Gorgon's Head was founded as a social fraternity, and it wasn't very secret. Old copies of the Daily Tar Heel detail their dazzling parties. But since the early 1930s, there hasn't been much printed about the order, and the library's entire collection of their records is closed, except to current members. In all of our sleuthing, we did find one crucial detail, the address of the Gorgon's Head Lodge. We headed to the belly of the beast to uncover the truth.
This one right here? No, up here, this one. Yeah.
The Gorgon's Head Lodge blends in with the other houses on the street, until we started snooping and saw coolers labeled GHL and beer cans scattered around the yard.
Are we like trespassing?
I have no idea if this is technically trespassing. I don't think there's anyone home.
Mm-mm.
But their neighbor Merritt Hampton was. She's lived two doors down from the Secret Society since 1998 and has even gone in to see the lodge for herself.
The coolest thing is they have a gigantic piece of taxidermy. And you know, for the life of me, I can't remember if it's a lion or a mammoth, woolly mammoth something? I don't know what the heck it is. Big dead animal's head is hanging on the wall right over the staircase.
Elaborate parties and woolly mammoth heads? It seemed every time we turned over a new leaf, we just unearthed more questions about the order and the lodge. To really find out more, we had to talk to members.
We went digging through tax filings and university records. Armed with a list of names, we hit the road to see if anyone would talk to us. Door after door, we were striking out, and we tried one more house before giving up. It was standing in front of a stranger's house in Chapel Hill with two dogs barreling at us that we struck gold.
Somebody's driving up.
Are they turning in?
Yeah,
they're turning in.
We met a living, breathing member of the Order of the Gorgon's Head, with his gold GHL medallion keychain to prove it. However, our source asked to remain anonymous so as not to be identified by the other members. Standing in his driveway, he recounted the night he was tapped to be a member of the order.
That night, when he was a student at UNC in the 70s, he got a mysterious call telling him to meet at the old well. Once he arrived, two members of the Order of the Gorgon's Head kidnapped him. They drove him around until he was disoriented, gave him liquor, and dropped him off alone in Pittsburgh, knee-deep in mud, with one instruction: get back to Forest Theater by the next morning. When he woke up, he was soaking wet and missing a shoe, but he found a ride back to Chapel Hill, where he was initiated into the Order of the Gorgon's Head.
Our investigation didn't come up empty, but we still didn't know who was running around campus in masks, and we weren't the only ones wondering which students are in secret societies either.
I talk with students all the time. I may be talking to members, regularly and don't know about it.
University archivist Nicholas Graham also reminded us that the traditions of secret societies, like the Order of the Gorgon's Head, are woven into UNC's colorful history.
Whether we know it or not. In Chapel Hill, I'm Shawnee Wilson.
And I'm Maggie Blunk.
And for this week, that's Carolina Connection, a production of the UNC School of Media and Journalism. Our director this week was Shawnee Wilson. Our technical director was Maggie Blunk. I'm David Duchin.
And I'm Jessa O'Connor. Like what you heard today? You can hear current stories and past shows on our website, carolinaconnection.org. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend. Mm-hmm.